Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're tuning in from one of our Minnesota radio stations, listening on our national broadcast, or catching the show on a podcast platform, we are glad you are here. Before we begin today's program, we pause to remember Sergeant First Class Nicole Amore of White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Sergeant First Class Amore served our nation with dedication and courage for more than two decades and was recently killed while serving overseas in Kuwait in support of U.S. military operations. She was a devoted soldier, a wife, and a mother of two, and her loss reminds us of the very real sacrifices made by our military families every day. On behalf of Minnesota Military Radio, we extend our deepest condolences to her family, her fellow soldiers, and all who knew and loved her. We honor her service, we remember her sacrifice, and we will never forget. On today's show, we meet the Assistant Commissioner of the Healthcare Division at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and later we'll speak with the MDVA's Director of Government Affairs. In November of 2025, Diane Lynch DeCombs assumed the role of Assistant Commissioner of the Healthcare Division at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. In this position, she oversees and supports the administrators of eight Minnesota veterans homes. Diane is a licensed nursing home administrator. She holds a Bachelor of Arts in Healthcare Management and a Master of Business Administration from the University of St. Thomas. She's also currently serving as the president of the National Association of State Veterans Homes. Diane, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug. Glad to be here.
Well, it is good to have you here in the studio. Congratulations on your selection and this new role that you're undertaking.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to be here. As a former native Minnesotan, it's been really good to come back home.
Yeah. So. Well, let's just start kind of at the beginning, so to speak. I don't mean from like birth, but, you know, what led you to the MDVA? Maybe tell us a little bit about your background and tell us about how we stole you from Wisconsin.
Sure. Well, I've been a long-term care administrator for about 27 years. And as I indicated earlier, I grew up in Minnesota, southern Minnesota, and worked actually most of my career in long-term care here in the metro area. About 15 years ago, I did a stint in Iowa and then subsequently went to civil service through the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs about 6.5 years ago. My interest in serving veterans really comes from a couple places. One, my husband is a veteran. He's a veteran of the country of France. And we both have family members extending way back that were in military service. So veterans hold a special place in my heart.
I would imagine through those conversations you've had with your husband, who you noted is a veteran from the French military. Do you guys do some comparisons then of like the benefits that maybe they get versus what our U.S. military get?
Absolutely, we have. And I have to say, from outside lens perspective, we really see the difference. The United States is very supportive of our veterans, and Minnesota is significantly more supportive or has additional programs and services for veterans that you just don't see in other countries. My husband's experience was the day he exited the military, he was a civilian, period, the end. And so here with that additional services and benefits, it's just much more appreciative of the service of the individuals in the military.
That must put things into a little bit of a different perspective for you. I mean, obviously, you know, you're in a position now where you're caring for our U.S. military veterans. But to understand the way it works in other places, that has to give you some appreciation.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a young person growing up, really having that appreciation for the folks that fought for our country and protected our freedoms. My husband has that same view, but from a lens of watching Americans come and support their country from German occupation during World War II. So it's really enlightening and interesting to watch how countries support their veterans differently, but also how people around the world view an American veteran.
So. Yeah. All right. So you kind of traveled around a little bit. You talked about Iowa. You talked about Wisconsin. Somehow, some way, you found out about a role that is a brand new role for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. What did that process look like for you?
Yeah. Well, my role in Wisconsin was pretty similar to the one I'm in now, in that my role is primarily to support the administrators of the facilities here. And being a long-term care administrator myself, having served in that role for, like I said, 27 years, I have an appreciation for how difficult the work is. We are a highly regulated industry, and I really have a passion for supporting those who are doing the work every day. And when I discovered that Minnesota had this role posted, it was a little ironic. When I started my role in Wisconsin, the role had been vacant for a couple years, and I had come from the private sector, and there was no one to teach me.
Mm.
So while long-term care is an industry with standard sets of regulations, the VA part, as it relates to regulatory requirements for our state veterans' homes, was new to me, but I had no place to learn. So I called Minnesota and talked to the team there, Simone and Carolyn and Doug, and I said, can I come over? And they welcomed me over, and I came over and learned from them. So when this job opened up, I felt like it was almost karma coming back to say, okay, we taught you. Now you need to come back here and deliver. So it was really a neat experience.
Yeah, well, that must be kind of neat then that you actually know some of the people that you have to work very closely with on that executive team.
Yeah, yeah. And it really – it's an appreciation to see how it works in other states. One thing I will say is in our association, they say when you've seen one state veterans home, you've seen one state veterans homes, and that is really true. While we are, as an entity, all state veterans homes kind of operate under same and similar rules, the support they receive from their states is very different. Not judging that good or bad, just saying it's very different. So mm-hmm. They operate differently, and it was really interesting to come here and see the differences, even just in two neighboring states.
Yeah, right. Well, we're glad that you're here. Let's talk a little bit about what it actually means for you, though, to support the administrators. You know, you've been in the business for a long time. You know that within the last 2 years, Minnesota opened up the additional state veterans' homes all at like one time, you
right.
know, three more. So are you talking about just with the compliance support? Is it support trying to find people to actually work in
yeah.
the agency? I'm like, what does support mean to you
yeah.
that you're trying to provide to each of these eight different veterans' homes?
Yeah, I would say all of that. So in one of my kind of extra roles, I serve as the president for the National Association of State Veterans Homes, and we really focus on what are the needs and the pain points of veterans' homes across the country. We advocate for legislation and reforms or additional funding based on the needs of the whole. And one thing that is a need of the whole is the workforce. The workforce in this country, I think we could all agree, is challenged, whether that's, you know, no driver for your DoorDash or the hotel that says, we're not going to clean your room for the week because we're short on housekeepers. Long-term care really has traditionally struggled, but more so post-COVID. And I think our industry really has a hard time attracting people because it's not a shiny job. It's not a techie job. It's not a social media type of job. It's caring for others, and it can be hard, and it's highly regulated, as I mentioned. And so attracting people to work in our industry is challenging. And I think we've seen that in some of our new homes. Just they're in rural areas. The workforce is a little bit reduced out in those areas. And so really trying to find what drives people to want to work for us. Our state veterans home have a lot of folks who've got longevity, you know, 10, 20, 30 years serving in our homes. But we've seen a shift in that. I understand that your average age of someone working in long-term care is between 40 and 50. So how do we find those 20 and 30-year-olds and entice them to want to work in our industry?
Yeah, I'm wondering if, you know, as you go through this process, is if someone can understand and then really get behind the mission, if it makes that recruiting aspect of it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one thing that I think I know for me was watching former veterans, you know, when I was a young person, and how they supported the freedoms in our country and how valuable that was to me to this day. My ability to vote and have an opinion and be represented, those things are important to me. And I think that's important to the youth today, too, the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And veterans is what allows that to happen. And So I think we just need to do, I don't know if it's a better job, but a different job in how we market the roles that we have open in our facilities.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of your priorities in your new role as the Assistant Commissioner for Healthcare. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm in the studio here with Diane Lynch-DeCombe. She's the Assistant Commissioner of the Healthcare Division over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Diane, as we were closing out the last segment, we're talking about just a whole slew of things, and I want to kind of bring it back to your role at the MDVA as the Assistant Commissioner, and maybe you can kind of highlight what are your priorities. We know you have to provide that assistance to those administrators, but what are the priorities you're bringing in as you take on this new position?
I would say initially my initial priority is watching and learning how MDVA, or the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, operates their homes. Again, they're all slightly different. And then taking that observation and asking where the pain points are, where I can help out, where my expertise comes in to lend a hand to trying different things, searching for different solutions. One of the things I will say that as an association we've really noticed in the last few years is the VA's approach to broadening health care for veterans. And what does that look like? And how will that impact our homes? For example, community care, paid home caregivers, medical foster homes, those are all good things for a veteran, allows them to stay out in their home communities and provides choice, which I'm a strong advocate for choice. But it does take away something from our homes if those people stay in their home with a family paid caregiver, or if they go to a medical foster home, that's one less veteran that might be living in our state veterans home. So how do we become part of that future model? And perhaps that's things like providing therapies to veterans that still live in the community but can come into our veterans homes that already exist, already have therapy gyms, and can provide those services. So I would say we're at the beginning of exploring how we are part of that future model, but still continue to keep our state veterans homes fresh and providing quality services and programming for veterans that do need to be in a long-term care setting.
That must be one of the advantages you have. I mean, obviously serving in the association as the president, right? I mean, you're in on some of these other conversations, but you can help shape because of the experience that you now have on the ground, not only previously in Wisconsin, but now as this deputy commissioner, assistant deputy mm-hmm. commissioner in our healthcare industry, to really try to shape this national model and drive things to what you're talking about right now.
Absolutely. We do. The association advocates for the whole of the association. So there are needs that other parts of the country, for example, veterans as a population, 50% of the veterans in this country live in 10 states. It's highly focused in three states,
yeah.
Texas, California, and Florida.
In Florida, yeah.
So they have a different experience and a different demand than we may say here in the Midwest. And how do you take all those varying needs and align them with the perspective from the VA about choice, which, again, I'm an advocate for choice, and still keep your veterans' homes viable and sustainable in the future. And those things shift over time. And it's our job as an association to take that information and say, where do we fit? And how can we advocate for either more funding or different regulations to continue to be that service provider for veterans?
Yeah. And, you know, the homes date back to 1864. And so if you're still trying to implement that same model today, you're never going to survive. So it is important to look forward and have this strategic plan to maybe incorporate some of the things you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of our homes around the country are that older. You know, we're seeing a lot of construction, renovation, rebuilds to a newer model in skilled care. But we have to look at the future and say, what's that population look like? What are their wants and needs? And how do we adjust that model to the model that we're going to need in the future? And some of that's partnering with the VA on things like, you know, we're currently asking for legislation around covering high-cost meds. And high-cost meds 30 years ago almost didn't exist because that person, that veteran that might need chemo, for example, would go to the hospital to get that chemo. Now that same chemo comes in a pill, and our nurses can give that. But the cost related to that chemo is something that the state veterans' homes can't just absorb, but they're being asked to. Out in the community, if a veteran goes to a community nursing home, the VA pays for that medication. So we've got legislation saying, VA, will you please pay the state veterans home to cover that medication? Otherwise, the financial burden really gets to be too much for state veterans homes. And that's a unified request from our association across the country.
So you've been in position since November. You've got 8 Minnesota veterans homes. Have you been on the road quite a bit, getting to each of the different homes and visiting with leadership in those homes to talk and ask about these things we're describing right now?
Absolutely. I've been to all of the homes at least once. Several of them, I'm on my second and third journey to them, and they're fairly spread out. So the windshield and I have a really good relationship. But what's really wonderful about that is, A, you get to see a lot of the Minnesota countryside, and I'm a country girl, so I love it. I love to drive past all those farms. But the other part is the difference in all the homes. You know, you've got Minneapolis that is big and wonderful and a really pretty location, but it's city. Then you've got some place like Laverne that's been around for 30 years and a much quieter setting, more rural. And then you've got our new homes that are like that shiny new penny. So I think they're all very wonderfully appointed, wonderfully staffed, provide good care and services, but they're all different. And that's really a unique and wonderful thing. As far as the differences in what the administrators are sharing, I think just like we see in our association, they have some common things, themes, and we've talked about that earlier, one of which is workforce. You know, a couple of our new homes really struggle with workforce in the areas that they're in. So again, how do we promote working for MDVA and the good that you can do serving seniors, but veterans specifically? And then, you know, the broader industry of long-term care also then is wrestling with changes. And how do we use robotics and AI to support a reduced workforce? And so I think there's a lot of change happening in our industry. Those who have worked in the industry are probably laughing, saying, when hasn't it been changing? It feels right. Like it's been changing since the 80s. It's a work in progress in an ever-evolving, you know, kind of need to adjust.
Yeah.
And the VA, like I mentioned earlier, the VA is looking at ways that they're changing, both in what they provide but also in the financial support, and we're having to adjust to that.
We've got about 2 minutes left here, and I've got 2 more questions for you that I really want to get to. One, somebody's listening right now. I know that the MDVA has said we're going to post some positions. We will do will train type mm-hmm. positions. But what do you say to the person that's listening right now that maybe is going to consider going into serving our veterans in healthcare? What do you say, or what message do you have?
Yeah, as somebody who's worked in long-term care industry for 20-plus years, you can't underestimate or beat the opportunity to learn from others. The people that have come before us have shaped this country, fought for this country, and there's no reward like serving them. The second part I would say is whether it's tech or whatever the new kind of social media type jobs, there's something about providing care for people that really is rewarding and sticks with you long into your future years. I can remember one of the first people in one of the first nursing homes I worked in because she had such an imprint on me. And so I think we need to get out there and talk to the young people and tell them the benefits of working in long-term care. But in addition, let's be honest, what are the benefits of working for government? There are benefits. And absolutely. I think people don't see those when they see kind of short-sighted. People aren't usually looking about retirement when they're 20.
Right. Well, John Kelly will be our next guest, talk about legislative initiatives as a legislative session starts here in Minnesota. And I'm sure that you're working with him about some initiatives and things that you all need for the homes. And you've kind of talked about some of those things at the national level. But last 30 seconds here, where can someone go to get more information? Where would you direct them?
I direct them to the MinnesotaVeteran.org website /homes. You can see something about each of the homes there, and you can go to the applicant portal.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Diane, thank you so much. It was great meeting you. Congratulations on your selection, this new role. I'm sure we'll have you in again as some things come to fruition as well.
Sure. Thanks, Doug.
All right. You bet. That's Diane Lynch DeCombe. She's the Assistant Commissioner of the Healthcare Division at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me for this segment and the next segment is John Kelly. He's the Director of Government Affairs over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Not a stranger to the program. We've had John on a few times. John, welcome back here to Minnesota Military Radio.
Great to be back, Doug.
All right, John. So we just had the new Assistant Deputy Commissioner of the Healthcare Division on. And, you know, had great introduction of her and her new role. Of course, you know, funding is always a thing that's on everybody's mind. And you and your position as the Director of Government Affairs, you get to spend a lot of time with our state legislators asking for money, talking about programs, new initiatives. So you're going to fill us in today on, you know, really what's going on with the MDVA, the kinds of things that you're working on. But before we get to that, just real quick, we know you came from New York, but give us the quick bio.
So I am a proud Army veteran. I served 8 years in the Army National Guard and Army Reserve. I did a tour in Afghanistan, 07, 08. Then I have a bachelor's in political science, in master's in public administration. I worked in the New York State Legislature, and then I had the good sense to marry a Minnesotan, and we ended up back in St. Paul and worked for state government now for a decade here. I started at the Department of Commerce in Minnesota, and then I worked as policy advisor to Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan during their first term, covering a number of issues, including Veterans Affairs. Then I went back to Commerce as their Director of Government Affairs, and then I came over to MDVA in 2024, and here I am.
Yeah, a lot of great experience. And what's interesting is every time that we've had you on the show and we ask about where you've been, you always remind us that you've had the good sense to marry a Minnesotan.
And so, I've made a lot of decisions in my life, some good, some bad. That's the best one.
Well, so there you go. Yep. It's good to have good sense, I guess. Well, hey, thank you for your service and, you know, of course, all that you do for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. So let's get right into it, right? Okay. There's a reason why you stayed in this type of a role, but what makes it different about being with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs versus other legislative affairs type positions that you've held?
You know, I think coming from the Commerce Department, which has, you know, two main committees of jurisdiction, the Commerce Committee and the Energy Committee, and those are just inherently more, you know, room for disagreement kind of areas, even though the Commerce Committee, there's a saying called peace in the valley, and where they want folks to work out the bills in the hallway before they come in for the hearing. In the Veterans Committees in both bodies, there's a commitment, doesn't leave your R&D at the door. We're here to serve veterans. And it's just really been a great experience working with across both sides of the aisle, just rolling up our sleeves, helping veterans every day, meeting a lot of veterans. I think that's one of my favorite parts about working at MDVA is just getting to work with other veterans every day with a good mission, with a solid backing by the legislature and the governor to just get this done and provide the best possible level of service and for veterans and our families here in the state.
Yeah, you know, and we've had, obviously, Senator Putnam, we've had Chair Bliss on. And what you described about leaving that R&D out in the hall is something both of them have talked about on this show, mm-hmm. about let's keep veteran issues separate from all the other stuff. Let's come to an agreement on this one thing that we shouldn't be arguing about, and that is taking care of our veterans, specifically our Minnesota veterans. And I think that that fares well for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and probably the Department of Military Affairs as well when you go asking for things that support our service members and our veterans.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Chairs Bliss and Zhang, you know, work together on this committee. They're co-chairs. They lead it in the House side. And they're, you know, they're really just focused on serving the veterans. We also, you know, this past session, we created an entire new category of veteran in state law. We'll get to that, I think, a little later in the show. But for the SGU veterans, and that also was a bipartisan effort. You know, we had legislators from both sides of the aisle on that task force. And there's just a lot of really good work happening. I mean, I served in the New York Army National Guard for 6 years. And I've lived in Minnesota now for a decade, and I just the support and pride that Minnesota has in its in its National Guard forces is really really heartening to see. I think, and I think that you see that support come through in the committee process, whether it's in the Capital Investment Committee or it's in the Military Affairs Committee. It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, the session obviously kicked off last month. And so they're hot and heavy into it. It's a very short window in this bonding year, right? Yeah. So what kind of prep work have you done now to get MDVA ready to go when you go in and make a pitch? Because you got to be short and sweet and thorough, I would imagine.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thing is for folks that are listening, the department is a cabinet agency of the governor. So we have to follow something called the governor's policy and budget development process. So we start that work pretty much right after each session ends, the work continues. So, we're here at the home of KFAN and, it's like a baseball season. The season ends and they kind of collect themselves up, maybe take a little break, and then they're right back into training. And it's the same thing with us. When we have proposals that we need to bring forward, we start at the stakeholder and staff level where we're generating ideas for changes that goes up through the commissioner and the leadership team. And then that, those proposals that are cleared by the commissioner to move forward go up to the governor and lieutenant governor and MMB, and they kind of decide what we're going to be moving forward for the legislative session that's going to be coming up. I always tell folks, if you have something you want to see be a department bill, you got to come talk to us in the summer. By the time the fall and early winter rolls around, we're too far along in our process and you're too late for us to carry it. Doesn't mean we can't support it, but if you want to see MDVA bring something forward as its own department policy bill or budget item, you need to come talk to the departments in the summer. And that goes for all state agencies. And so since this is the second year of the biennium, we're focusing on policy and we're focusing on bonding. So we have 4 policy bills and we have 2 bonding requests this session.
And, you kind of talk about if someone wanted the department to push something, mm-hmm. You're not the only entity that can bring military initiatives forward. We know that the Commander's Task Force has some things. Of course, they work in concert with you all as well at the MDVA. Mm-hmm. You've got other veteran service organizations. I know that one of the main things that the CTF is really trying to get after right now is that property tax exclusion.
Yep.
There was just a testimony on that. Can you give any information on that, on what that bill proposal is now?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So I think, for folks that are listening, the Commander's Task Force is made up of the congressionally chartered veterans organizations in the state, the main ones. So we're talking about the DAV, the Legion, VFW. They have one priority this session, and it's the Veterans Homestead Market Value Exclusion. So it would be reducing down the price of the house or the home for tax purposes. And so that has been on the books here in Minnesota for 18 years, and it has not been increased in 18 years. And so what is being pushed here at the legislature, and it was in a bill in the legislature last session and every subsequent session for a long time, to increase it. And this session, it was amended, and I believe they're moving it up to $225,000 for 70%, and I think $400,000 for 100%ers. And so the idea here is not to increase it anything beyond just catching up with where we are with home values in 2026 compared to 2008 when this bill was passed into law. And so there was advocacy in the it was heard in the House yesterday. It's moving on to the tax committee. I believe it'll likely be heard in the Senate side at some point this session and kind of go through that process. And so we'll see how it goes. But again, that's the sole priority of the CTF, and we're going to be interested to see how that goes this session.
Now, we've got about a minute left in this segment here. So from the MDVA's perspective, though, you talked about some policy things that you want to do, some bonding things that you want to do.
Yep.
Can you just focus on one of them real quick here in like 30 seconds and tell us what you're working on?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I'm excited about that we're doing this session is we're updating our veterans education programs and consolidating those and making it just clearer for veterans and their family members to understand what's available and also kind of consolidating into our one education team instead of being across two teams. I think it's going to be good for folks. And it's always good to make sure the law is as simple to follow as possible. So that's what we're doing.
Perfect. Well, we'll come back after a break. We'll talk about a couple of other initiatives you have for this legislative season and then talk about what's coming up. And specifically, we want to talk about the SGU process as well.
Great.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm in the studio here with Mr. John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And John, you're talking about one of the initiatives or priorities that the MDVA has. Any other priorities or initiatives that you'd like to share with us?
So, yeah, as I mentioned, Doug, we have the four bills that we're bringing forward this session. They're all to the floor now in the legislature, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. They've had their committee hearings, and then we've also had our bonding hearings and are presenting on two items there to just secure more dollars for our veterans' homes and cemeteries. And then looking, you know, this is the second year of the biennium, but in the first year of the biennium, we got some pretty critical funding from the legislature in the budget year to focus our energies on ending veterans homelessness, veterans suicide prevention, and staffing up the three new veterans homes in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. And thanks to the support of the legislature, we're making progress in all those areas.
You know, one of the things I'm interested to know is obviously it's a short legislative season and you do a lot of prep work leading into it. And then it really never ends, right? You gave the baseball analogy. Yep. You're always in training some way or another. But during this season, are you, as the commissioner, are other members of the MDVA executive team, like kind of on a short leash so you can do like office engagements or get into scheduled hearings or maybe even unscheduled hearings like, you know, in the hallway? What does that look like? You know, are you got a crazy schedule?
It's really, really busy. I would say, you know, our leadership team from the commissioner and to the deputy commissioners and our chief of staff, we are heavily engaged in this process through the governor's office. And also, you know, Commissioner Lindsay is an active participant in this process. He's advocating. He's our lead negotiator on everything. And he's really joining me to engage with the legislators on our priorities. We're meeting. We were wearing out some shoe leather going back and forth between Veterans Service Building and the Capitol in the early part of session, just getting folks up to speed on what we're doing this session, providing updates. We also had our Veterans Suicide Prevention Team in to present in both bodies on the Comprehensive Suicide Prevention Plan that they developed and just released in February. And so that's been really cool and exciting work to highlight as well.
Yeah, I mean, earlier there was some nice weather, so it wasn't bad walking up the Capitol grounds, and it's crazy cold again.
I'm back
nicely
in the tunnel.
Got the tunnel again there for you. I see you're all dressed up in a nice suit today, so you came from another hearing today, so it's just it's nonstop for you.
It's really busy. I'm lucky to have a team of really great professionals in the Government Affairs Shop and just all across the agency. It's really a collaborative effort across all the teams and all the leaders.
Well, I've been trying to catch up on some of the hearings, just tuning in. Maybe a lot of people don't know, but you can go right out to that YouTube channel and you can watch these hearings. Obviously, the veterans committees are always nice ones to hear as you want to know what's going on and right. Some really good testimonies. And I did hear the briefing from Rachel Johnson and, you know, about the suicide prevention initiatives. And, you know, of course, those health navigators, we've had her on to talk about that. We talked to Rayanne not too long ago. So a lot of great things in the works, but do you have anything that you really want to highlight as accomplishments? Not in the so distant past.
Absolutely. I think we're all going to kind of sound like a broken record as we come on the show and as the chairs do, but this is you know, we're in divided government, and we have been in Minnesota for most of my time working here. And for the fourth consecutive year, a standalone Veterans and Military Affairs omnibus bill was passed by the Minnesota legislature with strong bipartisan support. In the Minnesota House, the vote was unanimous. I have been doing this for a decade at the state capitol, and I also worked in the New York legislature, and I don't think I've ever seen a unanimous budget bill be passed in the House. And so that was just a full green board supporting Minnesota's veterans. There was a lot of good collaborative work between the commissioners and the chairs and stakeholders that went into that bill, which fully funded our veterans' homes, sustained our homelessness prevention funding, and beefed up veteran suicide prevention and other initiatives. It was just a really good bill. And again, like, just talk about strong bipartisan support. I mean, it was a strong vote in the Senate, and it was unanimous in the House. I mean, that sends a signal that the state really cares about this and cares about the work and cares about the men and women that put on the uniform.
Yeah, I think one of the nicest things about that is, if I'm not mistaken, it was like the first bill that was signed by the governor. You know, they just got it off of the table so they could move on to other things. So, you know, the agency wasn't worrying about what funding was coming to them, whereas other agencies were, because a budget hadn't been passed yet.
Right. We were done in regular session. There was no special session for us. It was done, and we were able to just Charlie on the you know, on the mic.
Now, one of the things that came out of the previous legislative session was to put together a working group or task force for the SGUs, the Special Guerrilla Units. There was a hearing on that again here this week. I'm just wondering if you can tell us, is that task force complete? Have all of the recommendations gone forward? And if so, what are they and will they be implemented?
Yeah, so in the interim, as part of the omnibus bill, we were charged, the department were charged with standing up the special guerrilla unit and regular forces in Laos task force, advisory task force. And so that was chaired by Senator Pa, and vice chair was our deputy commissioner, Ben Johnson. And then we had an open process and also had some direct appointees from the legislature. And so this was important work. So the SGU and irregular forces veterans are the only other non-military U.S. military group to be allowed to be buried in veteran cemeteries besides the Philippine Scouts from World War II. So under the new law, they defined who these veterans are, and then they set criteria of if you've been naturalized under the Hmong Naturalization Act. And then they had a second criteria that was had to be determined by this task force. So that was the work of the task force this fall. We met 8 times, 2-hour meetings in Veterans Hall and on teams to sort through, how do we establish who's a veteran under this category? How do we come up with a process that's fair? And we arrived at that. So there's a process that is nested in the federal pre-filing for burial process. And so an SGU applicant would apply to the National Cemetery Administration. They would provide all the documentation supporting their application. And what we've heard from NCA is, with changes in Congress in 2022, these should make these applications much smoother going forward. And then so we also kind of created a state backstop, however. So if a veteran applies and is denied by NCA, they can appeal to NCA. And then if they want, they can also put in an application to the department for special consideration by the commissioner. And we would require the same types of materials that they would supply to the NCA. We can evaluate it, ask for more information if we need it. And then they would, if they are deemed to be eligible by the commissioner, they would get a certificate saying they're eligible for these benefits. And then they would receive benefits relating to honor guard reimbursements for burials, a designation of veteran, SGU veteran, at least how the bill is right now, on their driver's license, and a number of other smaller, you know, non-fiscal impact state benefits besides, you know. But the biggest thing that we've heard, you know, from the community is the need for recognition for their service and also honoring them. You know, this is an older population of veterans. We're talking about folks that are in their 60s and 70s that have been waiting for this recognition and want it. And the biggest thing that we hear is the burial honors, you know, as folks that fought, you know, in Laos, in the secret war, and for the CIA and for America, and then came here and established lives. It's really cool. So, you know, I think the biggest thing here is the process is not done. We sent our recommendations in through a report to the legislature, and now they're carrying out the legislative process. If this bill becomes law, the eligibility process will be law, and then we will start fielding these applications, and folks will have 4 years to apply for this process. So the applications will be live until the end of 2030 calendar year.
Yeah. Well, I watched some of that hearing, and there was some fired up testimony, not in a bad way. I mean, just very passionate, I guess, is a better way to describe it. And right. So it was very interesting to hear from those SGU members and from the community. We've got less than a minute here. I'm just wondering, you touched on it a little bit. If people have issues, though, and they want to get something in legislation, what is the best way to do it?
I think first and foremost, people should go to their legislators if they have ideas around this, and then always are available to come to the department with your ideas. My contact information is on the website. We're pretty easy and accessible to get a hold of, but I think also engaging with your legislators is also an important way to do this.
And then go out to the MDVA website and actually follow the legislative updates. Mm-hmm. So that's a good way to go. All right. Well, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, it's always a pleasure to have you in the studio. I appreciate you joining us and give us a great update.
Thanks.
All right. You bet. All right. Thanks, John. Before we close out the show, I want to let you know that the next food pantry for veterans will take place on Tuesday, March 17th at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. This event is held on the third Tuesday of every month and is a great resource for veterans in our community. Thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. Our goal is to bring you meaningful and informative content each week, and we always welcome your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us to share your thoughts, questions, or recommendations. Next week, we get an update from the director of the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. We'll meet the chief of staff and learn about new electronic initiatives that will improve patient care. Be sure to tune in for that episode and visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com to catch up on past shows. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week. Need you take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so that we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.